talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to the bus on your Thursday Buckeye Talk. It's Doug Lee Marines. It's Nathan Baird. It's Stephen Means. And we've been hyping this thing up. Better be good. We've been talking about it for a couple days. I even sent a tweet of like a bus on fire, flames shooting out of the bus's exhaust pipe. I don't know. We're driving the bus for Ohio State players today. Nathan will drive a bus. Stephen will drive a bus. I'll drive a bus. And more importantly, our texters will drive a bunch of buses. And the idea of this is who's the player? Because I made the texters vote and then they also sent in comments. Who's the player that you believe in maybe more than the average Ohio State fan would believe in? Nathan, that was sort of how I tried to explain it. I don't know how many years we've done this now. Maybe this is only two. Maybe it's three or four. I can't remember. But it's kind of that idea that if you're driving the bus for a guy, you not only have to like him, but you kind of have to like him more than a typical Ohio State fan would like him. Maybe it's a backup that you think is going to have a huge impact. Maybe it's a young guy that you think is going to pop. Maybe it's a veteran who hasn't really gotten a chance, who you think is ready to explode. Or maybe it's like a really good player that you think is going to be one of the best players in college football. How do you think about what driving the bus means, Nathan? Because there's no better way to start a podcast than talking about a semantic interpretation of the title of the podcast.
Well, I think it's just predicting some of the things that I guess we have eventually seen. You know, it's last year there might have been fans who were driving the bus for Steel Chambers already and thought, unlike we did, or thought opposite of how we did, that maybe this whole linebacker flirtation wasn't going to be a big impact, and that's exactly what it turned out to be. Or maybe there were people who would have driven the bus for Luke Whippler, and you know, when we had some concerns about the way that offensive line, the center situation might turn out if Harry Miller couldn't play, and it turned out they were all right for the most part last year because he stepped up at a very young age. Just things like that. It's sort of trying to, you know, predict that thing so that you can someday look back and say, hey, I told you so. I was right about that guy all along.
Yeah, no, it's a good told you so pod. It is a good told you so pod. Stephen, when I sent a list of 34 different players to the texters and said, you've got to vote for one. And again, then we certainly welcome comments. We had never done that before. Otherwise, we had just said like, hey, write your guy in and we'll go through them all. But I did 34. And then I also had an other category. And I think there were at least another six people that got write-ins. But there were five players, Stephen, that I didn't put on the ballot. And I said, if you really, really, really want to vote for them, go ahead and write them in or explain why. But it was C.J. Stroud, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Travion Henderson, Denzel Burke, and Ronnie Hickman, because they're good players. And I don't know that the discussion, I don't know exactly how easy it would be to drive the bus for those guys. If you think Denzel Burke is going to be the best Ohio State cornerback that we've ever seen, then write him in for sure. But it's not exactly to me what the bus means. Was I correct to do that? Or do you think it's just as easy to drive the bus for Stroud or Smith-Njigba or Ronnie Hickman?
I think you can drive the bus for anybody as long as the thing you're driving the bus for is them doing something that is completely above all expectation for this season. So to use Stroud as an example, it's like he's not going to just win the Heisman. He's going to have a better season than what Joe Burrow had in 2019. That would be what driving the bus looks like for him. While with a guy like, I don't know, CJ Hicks, it's like, CJ Hicks is going to make an all Big Ten team because, you know, he's just a true freshman. And even if he's a five-star, he hasn't done anything yet. So I think driving the bus just needs to be relative to who you're talking about. And then it can be okay. But you can't, driving the bus for CJ Stroud can't be viewed the same way as driving the bus for, you know, Julian Fleming.
Hickman's the one that maybe doesn't quite belong in the same category as those other guys, just because I feel like there's some level of national attention on all those other four guys. And I know he led Ohio State in tackles last year, but that can almost be the way you drive the bus is say like, hey, all of you who are dismissing this and saying it was just sort of an accumulation thing and that a safety really shouldn't lead a team in tackles if it's a good defense. But you're wrong. Here's why he's actually really important and is going to be even better this year. That sort of thing. He's the easiest one that you could drive a bus for out of that group.
So again, I said, hey, if you want to write him in, right? Go ahead, but make your case. Nobody did it for Stroud. Nobody did it for Smith and Jigba. Nobody did it for Burke. Nobody did it for Hickman. A couple people did it for Travion Henderson. But again, that's just because it's one of those things too. I know what you're saying about Ronnie Hickman. I also don't know that I've had anyone have a conversation of like, I think Ronnie Hickman's going to be like the best defensive player in the country, right? Like we really want to do it with the guys that there's a little more uncertainty about. That's just kind of a little more fun to do. And so again, we got more than 100 comments. We got more than, let me double check what the number's at right now. Almost 600 votes from the texters, where again, you had to pick one person. So we're going to kind of talk about the top 10 the most, but we're going to use all those to lead us through. And I will just say, when we get to your guy, guys, talk about your guy. So if it's like, okay, here we are, it's time to talk about Steve Johnson. If you're like, yep, that's my guy, then that's when we'll have our conversation about that. Let's start with some of the people who maybe didn't get a ton of support. And I will tell you, of the 34 people that I put out, everybody got at least one vote except Mitch Rossi, but Mitch Rossi was a stretch, but I was like, I don't know. Some people get obsessed with fullbacks and walk-ons and good stories like that. I put him on there just in case. The guys I didn't put on him, but I should have put Cam Babb on, and I didn't. He got some write-in votes. He got the most write-in votes. And actually, let's start with Cam Babb. He got six write-in votes, which is pretty good for people who have to like make the case for you. From the 614, I don't know how the answer could be anything other than Cam Babb. I understand what that texter is saying, Stephen, but that's, to me, if you're saying it like that, that's an emotional case. Like this guy has grinded. This guy has tremendous ability. This guy is one of the best leaders on the team. This guy has something special inside of him. But we're kind of talking about football on the bus. It's not an emotional bus. It's mostly a football bus, because he's going to be a great leader, a great person, a great motivator, whether he plays or not. Like, that's true. If he plays and really contributes, it'll be a great story. But what would it take to really be able to drive the bus and be successful, Steven? Like, do you think that's really out there for Cam Babb with the way this receiver room breaks down?
I think the only way you drive a bus for him, just because it's been through the ringer, is if you want to say Cam Babb's going to have a game in a meaningful way, not like Arkansas State, but like against Wisconsin or Notre Dame or even the Michigan game. Cam Babb has 150 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns, which would first of all be like the greatest story ever. This dude fought through all that, and then he does that in the Michigan game. But that's like the only way you drive a bus for him, because other than that, it's like, I mean, yeah, if you're just going to mark down the fact that he's probably going to be a block, oh, yeah, he makes the most sense. The only thing that doesn't correlate with the other two guys have gotten is he's not from Ohio. But if we're talking strictly football, it's like, put some numbers on it almost. And I know the texters can't always do that when you're just, you know, voting in a poll, but we can't on this pod if we're going to do stuff for people like that.
I see what you're saying, Doug, about it being an emotional case, but his is like he checks like every emotional box. It's like not just perseverance, but like extreme perseverance, like every just keeps blowing ACLs out left and right and keeps coming back for more. And not just like leadership qualities, but like nth degree leadership qualities already showing, even despite those things and being named a captain last year and all those things. So I understand what you're coming from on that. I guess that's why I would allow it here a little bit, is because he's not just an emotional appeal, it's like the emotional appeal. He's almost the emotional standard.
The receiver room is really interesting, and I did ask a separate receiver poll question very quickly as I was going through with all this stuff, because if you're driving the bus for somebody, you're not driving the bus for somebody else. And if they play the same position, there's only one seat. We can't have everybody on the bus. It's not realistic. There's not enough footballs to go around. There's not enough yards and tackles and opportunity to go around. So I did ask a specific question about that. Nobody in writing in Cam Babb, nobody said, hey, I think he's going to force them to like split time with Marvin Harrison, and he's going to play 30 snaps a game and he's going to have 40 catches. You know, nobody said that. So if you think that's going to happen, man, that's quite a bus. but that's kind of not where that went. Another guy who got a minor amount of support from the 440, driving the bus for Matt Jones this year. The dude has been the best interior lineman for 2 years now, and he's going to show why he should have started last year. Happy to see actual guards playing guard, going to see big improvement in the run game. There's a pretty good football case for this, Nathan. Again, a PFF darling, their sixth offensive lineman last year, has never been a full-time starter, but has started. Fifth-year guy in the program, has a job locked down. It's going to be hard for him to be like an All-American, because a guard who's never started as a fifth-year senior is going to have a hard time breaking through. But he could be a guy that, you know, Joel Klatt and Kirk Herbstreit are talking about all year, being like, watch Matt Jones destroy a guy on this block. And Matt Jones, by the end of the year, is a first team all Big Ten offensive lineman. Like, to me, if you're driving the bus for him, that's the kind of thing you're talking about. And I do think that's out there.
Yeah, definitely. I think of him in the same way that we might have thought of, you go back to going into the 2020 season, if people were driving the bus for someone like, I mean, it's the other side of the ball, but like Tommy Togiai, and be like, well, you know, I know that he wasn't like the star of that 2019 defensive tackle rotation, but look what he actually did with those snaps. And now what happens if you give him a full-time job? And we saw what happened when you gave him a full-time job. And there's probably an example on the offensive line that I'm not necessarily thinking of right now. Maybe it would have been like somebody driving the bus for Brandon Bowen going into 2019 and being like, don't forget, he won a starting job before the injuries happened. Look, you know, he's coming back, and that sort of thing. So there's evidence here that he can do the job at a high level when given the chance. Now it's just a matter of sustaining it in the with a full complement of snaps, but also with, you know, the full focus now of opposing defenses too.
Kai Stokes is a guy that I did not put on the list of the 34 guys that I listed. We feel like they're pretty deep at safety, but he is a true freshman that I do think has opened some eyes from the 904. I know he's a freshman, but Kai Stokes has got to be on there. He's going to play a role, not a big one, but an important one, I believe, with depth. Can you see a version of a breakthrough for Kai Stokes, Stephen?
Not unless somebody gets hurt, knocks on wood, because they have had safeties get hurt over the past couple of years here. No, I think he is. I mean, he's going to have a role in special teams. I think he is in the same spot Marvin Harrison was a year ago. Spring football superstar, lost his black stripe early, and it's everybody's excited. And you realize, oh, wait, yeah, there's a lot of people still in front of him. So come talk to me next year at this time.
It might be a good analogy. Yeah.
It could be very popular a year from now.
Yeah.
He could be very popular depending, you know, if Hickman and Proctor are gone, and depending where things fit with Court Williams and Lathan Ransom and McAllister's gone, and you start moving guys around, and it's like, oh, no, it looks like Kai Stokes in year two is going to be a first year starter. We got a little taste what that could look like. I think that's potentially very compelling for 2023. This guy was not another guy who was not in my 34, Nathan, from the 419. I don't think I had him in there. Did I have him in there? So this person, he voted a write-in vote. I voted for Enoch Vamahi, who I believe will end up playing a pivotal role this year. I do not believe the O-line will get through the year completely healthy without ever missing a snap. I think if it's an interior guy, he will be a solid fill-in. This guy also wants to cast a vote for Trey LaRue because he's from the hometown of the 419. Respect. If you ever get a chance, I hope the kid shines. Next time you see him, ask him what toppings he gets in his pizza post pit pie. I don't know what that means. I feel like I should eat it. I feel like I should ask it. But Vamahi, if we think Josh Fryer maybe, or Zed Michalski maybe, is up at tackle, is it reasonable to think that Enoch Vamahi might be the first guy up if something happens, that there's an alien abduction on the interior of the offensive line, Nathan, and that he would be ready if called upon?
I think so. And there may even be a world where he is a little bit like a, I hate using this phrase, but it's the only one coming to my mind right now, like a poor man's Matt Jones was last year. Like, he was a relatively highly ranked recruit. He's a guy who has put in a lot of time. He's a guy who has been very apparently unselfish in the way that he has bounced around as they've needed him. He worked out some at tackle last year because he didn't have a lot of depth there. He was playing defensive tackle, warming up, or doing some snaps there in 2020 going into the national championship game and stuff, because that was where COVID was really hitting this team hard, was on the D line, and they just needed somebody who could plausibly go in there and get snaps. He's a guy that I really like. I almost thought about driving the bus for him, and just because I feel like he is one of those guys, we've talked about him so many times, that you're a pretty good recruit, but you don't like start immediately or ever, I guess, in this case. And then it's very much out of sight, out of mind really quick. And he's in it's one of those guys where you're in a weird spot too, if you're Ohio State, because it's like, well, you hope he doesn't have to be a big part of the starting offense. But actually, if he did, I think this person's right. I think he could probably hold his own.
Feels very Max Reyes. Both of those guys were around 120 in their recruiting rankings, and it was like a big deal when they got EDOC. I mean, Ryan Day got on a private jet to go to Hawaii to pull that guy in late in that 2019 recruiting class. And so it feels like we know 6, 7, and 8 for the offensive line at this point. And of 6, 7, and 8, he's the only interior guy. So I think poor man's Matt Jones is the best example, because I don't think they're going to purposely do that like they did last year. But if Donovan or Matthew Jones gets hurt, or Matthew Jones has to kick over to center because something happens to Luke Whipler, then sure, I can see Enoch having some quality snaps there. But that's not my pick. So, but I understand.
Like Max Ray never had it happen here.
Right.
Right. Never got on a bus.
His shining moment was the entire offensive line has COVID, so now he's a starting tackle against Michigan State.
Let's run through a couple of the one percenters. These are guys who got 0 or 1% of the vote, but at least got a vote. Let's see. Mike Hall, defensive tackle Mike Hall, linebacker Cody Simon, Matt Jones.
I'm driving the bus for Mike Hall.
Wow. Okay. Let me finish this one percenter conversation and then we will double back. Okay. The one percenters. Wow. I'm not wowing because I think it's bad. I'm wowing because I think it's really good. And I'm actually surprised he didn't get more votes here. The one percenters, Mike Hall, Cody Simon, Matt Jones, Lathan Ransom, Noah Ruggles, Luke Whipler, Teron Vincent, Ty Hamilton, CJ Hicks, who will double back on, Evan Pryor, who will double back on, Joe Royer, Cade Stover, who will double back on, Cam Brown, Jordan Hancock, Chip Traynham, who will double back on, Donovan Jackson, Tanner McAllister, and DeJuan Jones, who will double back on. So that's a lot of guys who got 1%. Mike Hall got one vote, Nathan. Was it from you?
It wasn't, no.
Okay.
So I guess he has two votes now.
I thought about him too. Why is he your guy? This is big. This is big for Mike Hall, who did not get a lot of love for the Texters, but is going to get one of the host votes for Mike Hall. Jerry Emig and Mike Bassford are going to put this in his bio on the site. He's Nathan Baird's drive. He's on Nathan Baird's bus. Second-year player. Top 50th national recruit, Cleveland kid, defensive tackle, good athlete, riser in the recruiting process. Go, Nathan. What's up?
So this is a little bit I was going out a little bit on a limb here because we have not talked to Larry Johnson or the defensive line yet. We've only seen a couple practices and windows of practice. But I'm going to make some comparisons here that I think, and also based on just some things we have heard, the way he's been showing up, that could be good. I was looking at the four. So he was the number four defensive tackle in his class last year. He was a summer enrollee, so he wasn't really going to have an impact. I think if you look at what JT Tuimoloa was able to come in and do and how impressed we were with that, which was warranted, but JT Tuimoloa, I really think we're going to look back someday and be like, that was just a different kind of athlete. I don't know if it'll ever get Chase Youngish, but you know what I'm saying there. Like, he has an all-around athletic profile that would help him make that transition, I think, quicker than someone like Mike Hall could coming in the summer. I was looking at, though, the four guys who were ahead of him, three guys that were ranked ahead of him. It was a guy named Mason Smith, who went to LSU. He was a freshman All-American last year. Shamar Turner from Texas A&M, a freshman All-ACC team. And then Damon Payne, the Michigan kid who went to Alabama, who had the red shirt because he was only like the number 24 player in the country. And you can't play at Alabama as a freshman if you're the number 24 player in the country, I guess. Mike Hall played 35 snaps last year over four games, limited impact, right? But when we talked to him in the spring, he said something that I then could apply to something we heard this week. This is where maybe I'm making a stretch, but like the other side of the ball, Justin Fry was talking about, Steven, you asked him, like, why are you starting the tackles outside or starting all the freshmen outside and moving them inside? And he was talking about the adjustment that you have to make to the speed of the game first before you make the adjustment to the physicality of the game. And Mike Hall talked about when he first got here last fall, he was really slotted in more as a three tech, which I think of as, it's not quite the same as moving obviously from tackle to guard, but moving from tackle to nose, which is where he was working this past spring, moving from three tech to nose, I feel like is sort of that same adjustment. You've got to get your feet wet first to the speed of college football, and then we'll worry about maximizing you from a physical standpoint. Ohio State needs what my call could be at nose badly. It was something that was missing these last couple of years. They've had it very recently. I mean, Davon Hamilton was a great player in the middle of this defense. Demanded double teams that made the whole defensive front better. Tommy Togiai demanded double teams that made the whole defensive front better. So some of this is what we know about Hall to be true. I mean, he almost falls into that like out of sight, out of mind thing we were talking about before, because he was practically a top 50 national recruit, but because he comes in the summer, you kind of, he slips down a little bit, I think, in people's minds, and you start looking at the guys who are here in the spring and could make a bigger impact. It's both what we know about to be true about him as an athlete, as a future defensive tackle, but also how badly Ohio State sort of needs a star at that position. And he might be as equipped as anybody on this defensive line to do that. It's not a stretch. I'm not predicting this, but it's not a stretch that we get to November, December, and Mike Hall is considered the best defensive lineman on this team, defensive tackle on this team.
I'm a little disappointed he didn't get more votes. He got strong consideration from me because what you just explained was the exact plan they had him on when they recruited him, was that there was going to need to be, he's the only guy who can be that type of nose you're talking about, who is just physically imposing on the interior of a defensive line. And they knew that, which is why all last year was just about get big, get big, get big, get big, get big. Like, he was already a big kid when he was in high school, but the physical transformation he's gone through since he got here is a bit interesting, which is why you can't even use the JT comparison, because it's not the same position, and what they're asking right. him to do is not the exact same. So there was always going to be Mike Hall, you're redshirting your first year, let's go through this physical transformation and then get to year two and let's see what happens here. But yeah, real strong consideration for me, because he looks ready to do that in a way that, quite frankly, whoever else gets some reps at nose, whether it's, you know, Jerron Cage or Ty Hamilton, their ceiling just isn't as high as what his is.
I was talking with the linebackers a couple weeks ago about this, and again, this could be one of your linguistic things, Doug, the difference between an answer and a solution, and how last year's linebackers seemed like answers but not solutions. Some of the defensive tackles that they have in that nose guard role seem like answers, not solutions, but he seems like he could really be a multi-year solution at nose guard.
And tackles who can tie stuff up and free linebackers to make plays are worth their weight in gold. I mean, I can remember this was a huge conversation 15 years ago when Quinn Pitcock had like a really good year and it really helped James Laurinaitis, right? Because sometimes if there's nobody in the middle who's tying up double teams and those interior offensive linemen get to the second level and get a body of linebackers, like, hey, you didn't make the tackle, you got blocked. It's like, well, yeah, because the guy was unimpeded to me because nobody was clogging stuff up. I will say one of the reasons I like the Mike Hall pick, it was when my career was flashing before my eyes the other day, mm-hmm. when six Ohio State linemen sat down and had an impromptu interview with Josh Fryer. The six guys who did it were Donovan Jackson, who was the only offensive guy, Tyler Friday, old, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, old, Zach Harrison, old, JT Tuimoloau, possible All-American, and Mike Hall. And it was like dudes hanging out, right? This wasn't backup. This was veterans and starters, and Mike Hall was right in there. So Mike Hall, I think Mike Hall is carrying himself like a dude. Now, maybe everybody, maybe all the guys would have been there and they just were the shower. I don't know.
But no, because they did that in the spring, too.
Like a dude.
Him and Talik Williams did that to Jack Sawyer in the spring too. So it's, and those are two, that's another guy that we think might be a dude.
But it's also, I think Talik Williams has sucked up a lot of the air in the room, which is why Mike Hall got one vote. Yeah. Because I'll tell you, Talik Williams got more than one vote. And it's also one of these things where this is dangerous. We have not talked about Mike Hall a ton.
Right.
So I think there are people listening to this being like, well, I would have voted for him if I knew you guys thought this, that they're for good or for bad. We are at least the partial information source on Ohio State football for the people who are voting here. And we have not had long, in-depth Mike Hall conversations. But the idea that He's the most gifted nose. They're going to rotate there, but he has the highest ceiling. Last year was about him getting physically ready to do this, and now he seems ready to do it, and they really need someone who can do it. Wow, what a great pick, Nathan Baird. Way to keep it to yourself for the last 3 months.
Here's another way I've been sandbagging this whole time just to drive the bus for the guy. Another way to look at it, maybe. We've talked before about recruiting misses. I really hate that term. You know, recruiting decisions that didn't go Ohio State's way, showing up on the field at defensive back. And how Jordan Hancock and J.K. Johnson were supposed to be kind of the fix to that this year. You could probably argue that that happened a little bit at nose. Like, just picking one guy, but Marvin Wilson, who was down to Ohio State and Florida State before he picked Florida State a couple years ago, like that was.
He was supposed to be like the last add to that 17 class. He
Right.
Number one class in the country.
Right. And who, like, could Ohio State have used him last year? Maybe. Like one of the best defensive tackles in the country. So I'm just saying that, like, this, in the same way that Hancock and Johnson from last year's signing class are kind of supposed to be fixing cornerback, I think this is the correction at nose that they've been looking for.
That's an interesting one, because I feel like, I don't know what Florida State was running in 2017 when they got Marvin Wilson. I just remember watching an interview with Jeff Okuda and they were asking him if he was coming, but it's four down fronts usually going up against, you know, three down fronts. Where it's only one defensive tackle in there. And that's often what Larry Johnson is going against when he's recruiting, especially those guys from the Texas and the SEC area. So I wonder how much that plays a role when they're trying to get that specific type of defensive tackle. If, you know, the next Jordan Davis, who's going to be a five-star because of what Jordan Davis just did, does he want to go play at Georgia because he's going to be the only nose on the field versus playing in a four down front at Ohio State if it comes down to Larry Johnson versus SEC?
Tommy Togiai was like that. Tommy Togiai is a top 100 national recruit who didn't explode in year one at Ohio State, but then when it was time to get on the field, he exploded pretty well. So, like, if Mike Hall is on some kind of Tommy Togiai path, that could start this year.
I was looking at the numbers. So Davon Hamilton, as a redshirt freshman, only played in 9 games, according to the sports referencing I was looking at, but 10 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss. Very, like, rotational, whatever. But Togiai in his second year, also 9 games, but 16 tackles. That's pretty good for defensive tackle in that short of that number of snaps, a couple tackles for loss. So I don't know if Hall completely explodes all the way up to being like, it's certainly to even maybe start the year, but it's just, I'm trying to project what this defense looks like in November, December, and who has to be on the field at crucial times. And it would seems very much within the realm of possibility that he is one of those guys.
But if we're on alert, we have talked about this a little bit since camp started. If we're on alert for the young defensive linemen, the four guys we're on alert for are JT, Jack Sawyer, Tyleek Williams, and Mike Hall. He's the fourth member of that group because the other three guys played more last year. But otherwise, there's no reason. He's like what was number 52 recruit in the country. Again, like this is, there's no reason. He's not like an outlier in that group. Right. Like he fits right in. And if they at any point, if you talk about that group, you know, he's not a Ringo. Although, I mean, have you ever seen the thing? Everyone thinks like, oh, I don't want to be the Ringo. You guys ever seen the thing on the YouTube channel where the guy explains why Ringo Starr was a genius as a drummer, that like most drummers would have played this part like this, but Ringo played it like this. And so I know it's like John and Paul and George get all the love, but like Ringo is actually really good. So maybe he is a Ringo, except Ringo was really good. Go Google the thing. Go Google the YouTube. Why Ringo Starr? Maybe it was on TikTok. I don't know where I
said. Do I have to Google the YouTube or can I just go to YouTube and search for it?
No, you got to Google the YouTube. Google the YouTube chat, text, string, Reddit, Discord, and you will find. But go look up the thing. That's my call. Cade Stover got a couple votes. He's a one percenter. A couple people like believing in Cade Stover from the 304. I voted for Cade Stover. Dude is just a worker. Linebacker, tight end, doesn't matter the position. Works his tail off to get on the field anyway. Ken, got to respect it. Someone who works hard like that, I'll drive the bus for any day with that work ethic. And another Cade Stover sentiment along those lines from the 614. Cade Stover represents the quintessential Ohio State player. Maybe even the players of older days. Ohio farm boy understands the importance of Ohio football, understands the rivalry and taking that back over. Rare two-way player who does what his team needs. Tough, strong kid who can be a leader. Huge fan of this upperclassman. Steven, I can understand fans like, this was a guy who kind of in his heart wants to be a linebacker, but whether it's his brain that is telling him, man, that like, I'm just going to get on the field at tight end. Maybe I'll make money in the NFL at tight end, or it's his, like his duty, his feeling of responsibility. This is how I can help the team. He's kind of doing like Paris Johnson last year. Guys do this. He's doing the thing he doesn't necessarily want to do, but it's going to help Ohio State. I can understand people get on the bus for that. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but they needed a tight end, and he's like, I'll be your tight end.
Cade Stover wants to hit people. I don't think he cares what side of the ball he's doing it on. He just wants to hit people. He is the most stereotypical 1985 from a small town movie linebacker I have ever met in my life. When I went to his school when he was still in high school, he barely fit in the building. That's how small their school is. He just wants to hit people. So if you're going to drive the bus for now that he's the tight end, he's just going to be smacking people around as the blocker. I can sign up for that. And it's going
to
be
thing,
like,
though, the thing that is the problem here is it definitely would not be a bus. You would be driving the pickup.
Yeah. To his farm.
Be driving the pickup and you would be in the back.
It would be a pickup with a horse trailer on the back of it.
Yeah.
Driving the horse trailer for Cade.
Him and his father actually run a farm, and I think they have a YouTube channel.
That is not like Cade Stover. This is like Cade Stover's real life. This is not stereotype of farm bike. No, he's legitimately is. Yeah. And he embraces it, and that's what he's about. So I can see people liking Cade Stover. Here's one that again is a one percenter. It's from the 612. It's our guy Rick in Buffalo. I'm driving the bus for Joe Royer. I know far wiser men than I have drank the Buckeye tight end Kool-Aid, but the vision of Joe Royer leaping to snag the first touchdown of the spring game from Kyle McCord is etched in my mind. Driving the bus for Joe Royer doesn't mean he's going to dent the wide receiver room's stranglehold on receptions, but it means he comes up with a big couple of touchdowns and first down catches in tight moments against Wisconsin and Michigan. Keep up the great work. Looking forward to your picks, Rick and Buffalo. Nathan, Joe Royer, what do we think?
I'll hear it. I mean, I think it's likely, kind of along what Rick is saying, at some point this year, a tight end is going to do something memorable in a good way, probably. And now the driving the bus exercise is kind of a way to pin the tail on the tight end as to who that's going to be.
Well, and can I tell you, the number one tight end got 1%. The number two tight end got 1%. And the number three tight end got a lot more than 1%.
I bet he did.
There is some love a-coming, and we will get to it. So let's not go there right now. Hero Canoe got a write-in vote from the 615. No Hero Canoe. I think he's going to be an impact player this year. That's hard because he's a true freshman lineman.
And he's a nose. So talk to me.
He might be on the Mike Hall plan.
Yeah.
So great to think that was a great get for them. I think it would be really hard for that to happen now. As I said, there were a couple people did Travion Henderson from the 419. You're not offering this as an option, and you all covered this a bit last week, but I still think I'm driving 90 in a 45 driving the Travion Henderson bus. I don't know if it will manifest in the Heisman. That's such a QB award, but by the end of the season, I'm confident the national narrative will be that Henderson is the singularly most special talent on the best offense in college football. This guy is Reggie Bush, Saquon Barkley level special, and he will use this season to propel himself as the number one candidate for the 2023 Heisman Trophy. That, Stephen, is how you drive the bus for a guy that everybody thinks is going to be really good.
Yep, because what you're saying is he's going to the Doak Walker Award this year, and then he's going to be the first running back to win the Heisman Trophy since, like, an Alabama guy, one of those Alabama guys. So, to the point I was making earlier, if you're going to drive the bus for somebody who's already a Super Bowl, a superstar, drive it somewhere where none of us were thinking we were going to take the bus, and that's what they did there. I respect it. It's maybe the payoff isn't right now, but they're playing the long game.
Yeah. Ronnie Hickman, I think maybe I said Ronnie Hickman didn't get a vote. He did. He got a write-in from the 205. Ronnie Rocket may be my favorite player on this team. I'll ride the bus. He's going to be a top 20 draft pick next April, Nathan. That's another version. Like, this guy is a very solid Big Ten safety who led Ohio State in tackles last year. It is hard for safeties to get drafted that high. People thought Kyle Hamilton was like, you know, the next Malik Hooker, and he slid a little bit in the draft. Like, Malik Hooker was the 12th overall pick and the 15th overall pick and has had some injuries in his career. Like, he's not going to be a top 20 pick in next year's draft because of the position that he plays. And I personally, Nathan, I don't think of Ronnie Hickman that way. I think he's a really important football player for this defense. But my expectation for Ronnie Hickman is to basically do the same thing he did last year, which is be a stabilizing, steadying force on a good defense, but maybe not be the kind of guy that makes you think, holy moly, that guy's going to be tearing it up on Sundays. So if this person from 205 is going there with Ronnie Hickman, I think this guy is a good NFL player. I respect it. Like, that's a bust.
Yeah. You know, I think I would, it's better than saying he's like a play hard guy, right? A try hard guy. He's better than that. I think there's more unique athleticism there, you know, going back to his high school days, being a major lacrosse guy as much as he was a football guy, and just having an all around athletic gift that he's now applied to football this way. But I agree with you. I would think that his ceiling is more like top 100.
Which would still be great.
That would be fantastic. I mean, we talk about those. We sort of like toss those aside when you're talking about Ohio State sometimes. But like, top 100 is, that's legit. That's safety, you can be a big impact player. Especially at that position.
If he were still playing the same position he was playing last year, I'd be not the top 20 draft pick part, but a lot of the other stuff they were talking about, I'd still be open to. But now that he's playing more of the adjuster, you know, do your job role, it's kind of harder to see that just because I'm not sure how that position flashes in comparison to the bandit role.
It's one of those things, who do we think is a better football player, Jordan Fuller or Ronnie Hickman?
I think Ronnie Hickman might be a better football player. I'm wondering how his combine situation is going to go. I think he might impress some people, especially once he gets into a lot of those meetings.
Well, it's one of those things, like, as we know, Jordan Fuller wound up going in the sixth round, was kind of underrated here, but everybody said he was the glue that held the defense together in 2019. And then he got to the NFL and they were like, oh, you're a starter and also like run our defense.
Yeah.
And so that would be, I mean, if you're telling me that Ronnie Hickman is going to be like an invaluable part of a Super Bowl level defense, and I know Jordan Fuller was hurt for the Super Bowl last year, then that's like, oh no, that's quite bus-worthy, right? So I think Jordan Fuller was underrated the whole time he was here, but I don't know that I see a Jordan Fuller career for Ronnie Hickman. That's not a criticism. It's just, but that would, if he has it, that then you're driving the bus for him if you think he's going to get there. Evan Pryor, a one percenter, Steven. I really want to pick Evan Pryor, but I just don't think the role will be there this year for him. He got a handful of votes. I get that, right? That you feel, we've talked a lot about, is it going to be a little more Mayan Williams? It's going to be a little more Evan Pryor. And I will tell you, Mayan Williams got some support on here. I can understand, Steven, like wanting to pick Evan Pryor, but not even being sure that you can.
So I remember when I brought the 60-20-20 thing on the Travion pod?
Yeah.
Not far off. I mean, that's actually a pretty good example from somebody I was talking to in the program. It's not far off. So I think the driving the bus for him would be if he and Mayan Williams are the 20-20 in that situation, Evan Pryor just does more with his 20 than what Mayan Williams does with his 20.
Yeah.
Which, because you haven't necessarily seen it in a real game, and it feels like Mayan Williams has flashed his first 2 years and now he's gotten his body right, I'm going to assume Mayan Williams got an abundance of votes in comparison to what Evan Pryor got. So that's probably part of this.
I do think it's one of those where it's like, hey, maybe Evan Pryor, does he help you win it an important game? Mm-hmm. Cause there's a one thing to be like, to take your 20 and yeah, you're solid and we can rely on you, but do you break a tackle and drop a spin move and a stiff arm and run 41 yards in the middle of the third quarter in a tight Wisconsin game and like help, you know, have the biggest play on the go ahead drive, Nathan? Like, that's, I don't know. Like, again, that doesn't mean that Evan Pryor is going to have 800 yards from scrimmage, but could he in year two help them win a big game in this role?
Yeah, I think it's definitely on the table. I thought he'd be a popular pick just because there, as much as there are a bunch of Mayan Williams fans out there, I think there are always people who are waiting for that that second guy who's a little bit more dynamic than just being a backup. And he seems to fit that profile.
All right. A couple more guys I want to talk about. CJ Hicks actually did not get as much love as I thought he might. He's a one percenter. It's absolutely CJ Hicks. He's the Travion Henderson of the defense, Steven. Are you surprised maybe that he didn't get a little more love? Because that comparison is he's a true freshman who's going to demand to be on the field. And when he gets on the field, he's going to show everybody how good he is right away.
No, because we just talked to linebackers yesterday. We got Jim Knowles, and he said that Steel Chambers and Tommy Eichenberg are solidifying those starting roles. I think if we'd have done this before Jim Knowles said those words, CJ Hicks would have been a lot higher on this list.
Scared people off a little bit, maybe.
It is interesting to remember, and I just wrote about CJ Hicks and his potential for the site this morning. Still has his black stripe.
Yeah.
Now, it was about this time into camp. I think it was four practices into camp last year that Denzel Burke lost his black stripe. So it can still happen. It's just they're clearly not forcing him ahead to something greater than he can handle. And he's also maybe not forcing the issue yet himself.
A couple more. This guy is absolutely going to play. And he got more votes. He was the highest one percenter, but he's still a one percenter. And it's DeJuan Jones. Nathan, from the 406, I voted DeJuan Jones. It seems like the average fan opinion of him is high. But with how he has played thus far and the development he has shown, especially since giving up basketball, as you've all discussed, I think he could be quite great this season. Additionally, if he is great this season, I could see him becoming a popular player nationally once the national talking heads figure out how good the mammoth human being that DeJuan Jones is, which could be good for him. Also, I saw him on campus once, and thus I have a vested interest in his success. That's as reasonable as anything. I thought you could find a path for more people to vote for DeJuan Jones than people did.
Well, first of all, people from space have seen DeJuan Jones on campus, like with a good telescope. Like, the guy is massive. And I think that this texter makes some really good points, especially about that possibly growing national profile. But let's back up even beyond that. Like, could he be great next year? Well, look, depending on how you parse your definition of great, like, he was pretty great at some things last year. He was a really good run blocker last year. He does have to improve as a pass blocker, but it kind of, he put him in that category of guys who've already done this. And now it's just a matter of replicating it or just making some natural improvements. And he is someone where you would think that maybe last year wasn't the plateau because he was coming along a little later. He had to get his body fixed. He is now fixing his body even more in impressive ways that we already talked about on the pod, and losing some weight and chiseling up a little bit. There's every reason to think that as good as he was last year, and he was a real reason why that offense was as good as it was, he could be even better this year. And I think they're right that once, because of his personality, because of his sheer size, those are absolutely some things that could get picked up in profiles on the national games or whatever, and start to get him out there as one of the faces of the program, really.
I think it's can a guy who's never, ever going to take a snap as a left tackle be a first round draft pick? I think DeJuan Jones is the profile where that could be a yes, just because he's that big, he's in shape, he's that athletic, and like, if he's an improved pass blocker combined with what he did in the run game, then like, I mean, he's still a super athlete. He could turn himself into a first round draft pick without ever taking a snap at left tackle, or just like the blind side of a quarterback. Because if CJ Stroud was left handed, then Paris Johnson would be the right tackle right now.
So I was making a, I think I was talking about the other day after we talked to Len about the Mekhi Becton comparison, and then Becton like blew his knee out in Jets camp.
Oh, yeah.
And it might be out for the year.
Not, huge not jinx great. Job there, yeah.
There's another guy though that I think I could think could fit here. And it's in the end was a negative story, but I think it fits in a lot of ways. In that 2020 NFL draft when a bunch of tackles went, Andrew Thomas was a left tackle for Georgia, and he was the fourth overall pick in the draft. But the guy who was the right tackle for Georgia that year, who was gigantic, was Isaiah Wilson, and he was sort of a surprise first round pick. He went 29th overall to the Titans, and then he had some off field issues and completely washed out. So that's where there's no comparison. But in terms of, you're not even the best tackle on your team, but your team's really good. Mm-hmm. You're really big. We really need tackles, and we're going to take a right tackle in the first round. I think if Isaiah Wilson could be a first round pick, I think DeJuan Jones can be a first round pick. So he was another guy who was on my list of maybes for my bus pick, because I think there's a world where like he's a first team All-American. And if you I mean, that's not what the average person expects of DeJuan Jones right now, that he's just like, he really gets in shape. He really gets it. He has Justin Fry. They have a new offensive line coach, and he just absolutely gets after it. I think that might be out there. Quick one on Reed Carrico, who, again, I appreciate the idea of irrational bus driving from the 419. I can't give you a reason why I picked Reed Carrico, other than I met his parents at the Ralphie's in Findlay after the Michigan game, and they were saying he is committed to never letting that happen again. I have a feeling he will play an important role this year. That's Eric in Findlay. And I talked to Reed Carrico in the spring. He was really trying to lock down that Sam linebacker job. We don't even know if there's going to be a Sam linebacker job, but it looks like he's kind of the third guy up at Sam right now. So I just, with the numbers in that room, I think it gets tough for him this year potentially. But I respected in the spring him talking about, like, I'm trying to find my role, man. I'm fighting. I'm trying to show them something. I'm trying to, in a crowded room, you know, kind of squeeze in there and show them what I can do. I think it's a really smart way to approach it. I'm just not sure it's going to work this year. All right, quick break. When we come back, I think we'll get to my guy. We'll do it next on Buckeye Talk. Doug, Nathan, and Steven, if you want to be able to vote on stuff like this, send in comments on stuff like this, have your comments read on the podcast, be a producer for our podcast, work for free, do our jobs for us. If it sounds like that's something you would want to pay to do, this is it in action. You can sign up at 614-350-3315. I do think, guys, we've hit a good stretch here where if you're just really more of an absorber, you just kind of want to take what, you know, read what we send and maybe cast a vote every now and then, because it takes 5 seconds to vote, I'll vote on that. I think it's worth it. But if you want to be more than that, if you want to be super engaged and you want to respond and send in comments and ask us questions, like, that's kind of like the next level. You don't have to pay extra for that. But I think it's worth it. We have definitely two different types, because even when we hear back, like, we got a ton of votes in the poll. We still have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who didn't vote, but they still are deciding to be tech subscribers because they think they like to absorb the information that we send every now and then. So I think I don't want people ever listening to the show to be like, well, I don't want to have to like write answers and do homework on football or whatever. It's like, there, just so you know, there are a lot of people who don't, and by their presence of existing, we can tell how many subscribers we have. They must get value out of it because they're still around. Either that, or they just decided they forgot to cancel it on their credit card, which I probably shouldn't be reminding them of right now. Don't do it. Don't cancel it. Don't just go back to forgetting.
It's like Jim Knowles' safety room, though. He's got adjusters and bandits, and we've got absorbers and engagers.
Oh. Yeah, I like it. We said we were going to like rename every position. Now we're going to name our tech subscribers. You're an absorber or an engager. Let's do some 2%ers. Let's see. Did I delete the poll? I might have deleted the poll. Hold on a second. Here it is. I had a document too. I had a Google Doc I deleted. The 2%ers. There's one of them. Paris Johnson got 2%. Paris Johnson got 2%. I was a little surprised by that, because if you think, like, I think Paris Johnson is going to be the best tackle in the country and a top 10 draft pick, I think that would be driving the bus for him.
Is that using the logic of maybe why people didn't vote for him? Maybe most people just don't view that as driving the bus because they just think Paris Johnson is going to be really good. And so it's common knowledge.
I tried to leave someone who you think is going to be good is going to be great. I mean, like, if you wrote in and said, lock this guy in for the top 10. Like, if you think Jed Wills is a top 10 pick, like, lock him in. I will bet my house he's a top 10 pick. That's driving the bus to me. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's a little obvious. But also, he's playing a position he's never played in college before.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, when he came out of high school, if people had said, hey, he'll be a first round, but you'll be a top 10 pick 3 years later, people would have been like, yeah, that sounds about right. And then that's almost been part of the consternation of why he's only getting the 1 year at left tackle, where you might only get it for 1 year instead of two or three, like you might have thought of back then.
Paris Johnson, 2%, 3%ers. Court Williams, Cam Martinez, Tommy Eichenberg, Zach Harrison, Tyleek Williams, Mayan Williams. And my pick is in that group. And it's Court Williams, which I think probably people could have
guessed. Yeah, shocker.
Are
you kidding me?
From the 440, I nearly submitted for G. Scott, but I couldn't submit for a tight end given the historical evidence. I just love the idea of him bulking up and creating mismatches at every level. But Court Williams seems like a starting safety. Safety feels like a crowded room, so I'd love for him to carve out a role against run-heavy teams that carries over into other games. So I am encouraged. That's not me. That's a texter. That's like kind of the only person who kind of wrote in. Maybe a couple of people did. I went through everybody's. I'm not able to read everybody's, but I went through all the responses we got. So the idea that maybe he is going to be like the third linebacker in some of these games as a safety is what pushed me over the top here. If I just felt like there's not a way for him to get on the field, that he's not going to play ahead of Josh Proctor and Ronnie Hickman. I don't know that they're going to rotate those guys just to get Court Williams on the field. And there's not a role otherwise. I don't think I would have picked him. So there's a part of me that's like, well, do I really want to pick a guy who might only have a real role for four games? But I'm also kind of thinking, Nathan, like maybe he's so good when he's out there, they're like, we've got to play him. And maybe it forces, I don't know what. They're not going to change his position. They're not going to bench Josh Proctor, but maybe he starts working in. And maybe there's just at a moment when it feels like he's a backup, he actually winds up being eighth on the team in defensive snaps. And there are moments that you remember from the season where he made a play that mattered. And it's five moments that you remember, not one. Is that if that's what it is, Nathan, if he's eighth on the defense in snaps and makes 5 to 10 plays that really matter, is that enough? Or is that driving a bicycle? Is that like a bicycle built for two? And like, he's waiting for a bus. And I'm like, I think you're going to be eighth on the defense in snaps. Will you jump on the back? I have a bell and a basket. Let's go get some ice cream. And Court Williams is like, what are you talking about? I'm going to be first team all Big Ten. What are you doing? It's like, I couldn't go any farther. I apologize.
Well, think about it this way. Eighth in snaps, but two of the guys you think will be above him are two guys that you sort of eliminated from the voting in Burke and Hickman. So now you're talking about sixth among guys who are even eligible for a consideration here. No, I think that's a legitimate impact because this is a legitimate pick because this is all about finding the difference making impact, like putting your weight behind who you think will make that difference making impact. Sometimes the unexpected impact that you can't always clearly see on paper going into a season or a game. Would you have picked him prior to the conversations we had yesterday, or did the conversations with Jim Knowles affect you picking him? Because I was going back through Knowles's interview today, and he seems to talk now. This is something I'm gonna have to write about because you've talked about the tweeners for so long. Yep. And guys can get stuck in between places. But he's talking about both Lathan Ransom and Court Williams as being like, they're doing things in practice, especially as far as stopping the run, where I think I have to find them a place on the field. So it goes into that rotation from strength versus rotation from weakness. And it's starting to trend towards that safety group where Knowles is saying out loud, we can rotate from strength and almost we need to rotate from strength.
I would have wanted to pick Court Williams, but I'm not sure I could have justified it. Before what Jim Knowles said the other day, I think I would have in the end had to guide myself somewhere else because I just didn't know how much he was going to play. So a door opening on a role, on a specific version of a role that I can envision in my head, and then I can envision him doing well at it and creating more for himself. That's what opened the door for me. So, all right. So we are officially into the top 12. And let me count real quick, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Court Williams is tied for 12th with Cam Martinez and Tommy Eichenberg. We did not get a lot of, we didn't really get much discussion about Cam Martinez. Steven, I think Cam Martinez would be like a really interesting guy. Again, especially since we just talked about now on the pod the other day, because Jim Knowles said it, he's cross-training at corner. And if they have any injuries at corner, oh my gosh, now Cam Martinez, we already knew he was the second nickel safety. That would have seemed like an interesting pick to me. And again, he got 3% of the vote, but not overwhelming.
It's less interesting because now he's repping at corner. And it's because they don't have any depth there. I think the case
less interesting. Doesn't that make it more interesting?
Nah, because I think that the case that you would have come in with from the get go is kind of what we've all been. It's like Cameron Martinez is actually the best nickel safety. Tanner McAllister just knows the role, so he'll start the first couple of weeks. But like Cam Martinez locks down that job coming out of those two basically preseason games after the Notre Dame game.
Like, and now we can't move you because you're so good. We think you're going to start over here. We're not moving.
Yeah, but and now you almost have to rethink it a little bit because. I mean, he's definitely not going to start over Cam Brown and Denzel Burke. So at best, if the situation holds and he actually has to stay at outside corner, at best, he's the fourth cornerback.
Yeah, but the way that Jim Knowles is starting to talk about nickel safety makes me wonder if that was going to be a real path for him anyway. I don't know. We're overacting a little bit just to those.
When he talks about Court Williams and Lathan Ransom, he's not really talking about nickel safety. He's talking about
And also, I think part of that was like Doug had asked a question of, do you have to think about certain things differently because you have to prepare for teams who are going to run the ball heavy now? So he was more referring to those type of games, which, yeah, you're in the Big Ten, but we're really only talking about three teams when you're having that conversation.
All I'm saying is where I push back on it being like less exciting now is that Jim Knowles loves Cam Martinez the way he talked about him yesterday. And now they may desperately need help at corner more than ever. And he's playing there. He's practicing there, at least some.
Which is fine, but Jordan Hancock doesn't get hurt. Does that still happen?
I mean, it doesn't.
Like, you love him, but you moved him because you had to, not because you wanted to and he was showing you some things. Is what it sounds like. Because that's how he preferenced it. The fact that this is a long-term issue. So now Cameron Martinez and Jansen Dunn are repping at cornerback. And he didn't make that decision. He wouldn't ask Tim Walton and Perry Eliano, like, who are some guys we can take? And they suggested that he take Jansen Dunn and Cameron Martinez. So it doesn't as the way he's talking about Cameron Martinez is fine, but it doesn't sound like they moved him because, oh, we got to put him at corner. It's like we have no cornerbacks. And so why not we take our backups and make them corners?
I'm just saying teams have discovered other things like this by accident and had them turn out very good. And if you're driving the bus for somebody already under the concept that, like, look, this guy just has something. It's something that's too good to keep off the field. I don't know where it's going to show up, but it will show up. Then the fact that he now has another option to get on the field is a little bit more enticing.
So there were some people, at least a couple people who like kind of wanted to vote for Jordan Hancock, but kind of pulled back from it after the report of limping. So like not a lot of juice there. Our guy Luke in Denver did say he wants to drive the bus for Jordan Hancock, Denzel Burke, Cam Brown, J.K. Johnson, and Jair Brown. That's who he's driving the bus for. I generally believe in this group in a way that I haven't since 2019. I'm thankful for Kerry Combs giving this parting gift as it feels like an oasis in a desert, and I am very excited to watch these guys turn into a lockdown group, albeit a shallow group. Also, I am hijacking and crashing anyone's Tommy Eichenberg's bus. That feels mean. You can't say that. So I thought he meant okay, I wouldn't have read that if I understood what he was saying.
You thought he meant hijacking it and driving it because he believes in Tommy Eichenberg.
And also I respected this from the 614. Last year I voted for Josh Proctor, and as a result, I am abstaining from this year's survey.
Respect.
I respect people who do that. So Tommy Eichenberg was in this tie for 12th. A couple people opined on Eichenberg from the 937. I think he gets thrown in the Borland basket, but is way better. He's got it all. And that's our fault if you think he's in the Borland baskets, because we put him there a lot. From the 434, Butkus Award winner will be Tommy Eichenberg. Nathan, that is not a bus. That is a space shuttle. That is how you do this exercise.
Yeah, that is out there. But listen, like, you got to go by what we see and what we hear. And we both hear and see that he is established at the top of this depth chart right now. Jim Knowles talks about him with that glint in his eye that linebacker coaches and defensive coordinators sometimes do when it's guys who are just like that block of granite. And that's not a knock against his mobility. It's more about his sturdiness and his reliability. So I'm not going out on that limb. But the concept that there's more to Tommy Eichenberg than he's shown us already, I can believe that.
11th is Zach Harrison, which is, we've had a lot of Zach Harrison conversations over the years. From the 419, I bet my brother that if Zach Harrison is an All-American this year, he will need to reopen the bar Lucky's on High Street in Columbus. So if Zach Harrison's an All-American, a bar gets its wings. Good luck. From the 614, I went with Zach Harrison. I've seen too many older players explode in their last year. He's clearly got the tools, and the presence of Jack and JT depresses his price to the point that I think he's a great buy for the expectations calibrated survey. I think that's a very smart way of talking about that. From the 813, the offense should be excellent, but I wanted to go with a defensive guy, so I went with Zach Harrison. It's year four. He seems like a great kid whose career hasn't lived up to the hype, and for his sake, which of course the team would benefit from, I'd like to see him take his game to that elite level. That's from the 813. One more on Zach, driving the bus for Zach Harrison in the 210. Too much at stake this year and too much development maturity he can bring as a true senior. Steven, I don't want to have the same Zach Harrison conversation that we've had a million times, but I think this feels about right. A couple people maybe buying low on an underappreciated senior, but also it's kind of more fun to go with more unknown guys because he's played a lot of football the last 3 years.
Low risk, high reward with Zach Harrison if we were actually gambling on these people, which
yeah, I mean,
I'm fine with.
And the hard part about it is like PFF named him like a preseason all, but you know, like there's some people who are, I think, sort of in their own way, like too high on Zach Harrison, which affects it also where it's like, well, no, he probably should be a kind of underrated good football player who has a chance to be great. And everybody goes, ah, yes, there it is. But also may continue, Nathan, to be very good, which also would be very helpful, but really wouldn't be anything that anyone would drive the bus for at this point, Nathan.
Yeah, it's just if you think that the kind of hate has gone too far on him, that people, because he didn't become a Bosa or a Young or hasn't, that that you feel like that couches the opinions about him in too dark of a tone or whatever, that the driving the bus is just an appreciation of him. I could see it.
10th, Tyleek Williams, who was one of two Buckeyes on Bruce Feldman's top 100 freaks list that came out on Wednesday. Yeah. And we won't talk about the guy who was higher than him. But Tyleek Williams was in the 60s overall from the 330. By some stats, PFF, Tyleek Williams outplayed Jack Sawyer and JT as a freshman last year. If those flashes become sustained and the two defensive ends of Mike Hall live up to their rankings, this defensive line feels like it could be great this year and historically good next year. That's Tim in the 330 believing in Tyleek. This is Andrew in the 330 who is all about Tyleek Williams. This year, I officially picked Tyleek the Freak Williams. I would still be inclined to add some Jackson Smith and Jigba Love, but I've been impressed with him since high school. My Tyleek take is this. I think he'll be first or second team All-American and play any important snap, mainly fourth quarter snaps against good teams. I think he'll be second in the team in sacks with JT first, and he will lead the team in tackles for loss. I think he is a rare Ohio State player. I think he will be the better Draymond Jones, whom I loved at St. Ignatius in Ohio State. That's the deal, Steven. Does that feel reasonable?
Yeah. If I said Zach Harrison is low risk, high reward, I think Tyleek Williams is high risk, high reward, where all that might be on the table, but as we've talked about time and time again, let me see it against first stringers who aren't tired in a real game. And so, like, yeah, there could be a major payoff there, or he could just be a really, really good three tech. So, like, if we were gambling, I don't know if that's where I would place my money yet, but I understand why the excitement is there. It's almost too high. Like it's like when we did the rankings of the players during the season and like Tyleek Williams finished like fifth amongst defensive players where it's like, okay, we get it, but let's put him in context.
I think a lot of it is PFF driven. I do think this is not a much of a value bet as you were saying, Steven. I think the value bet here, I'm not saying I predict this, but Nathan, like if you wanted to value bet, Mike Hall has a bigger impact this year than Tyleek Williams. I think that's a road you can go down that Tyleek Williams is a 7 and Mike Hall's an 8, you know, kind of thing, that they're both very good. But just because Mike Hall didn't play last year and Tyleek Williams played in blowouts, like, we have this view of them in a certain way. So this is not at all doubting Tyleek Williams, but I think a lot, some of the small sample size stuff, as Steven alluded to, is would guide me away from making him my pick.
Yeah. And I worry, I can tell just from the text, I think there's some opinion here that we or I are like down on Tyleek Williams, just because we've tried to contextualize a little bit the production he had last year. I think Tyleek Williams is very good. I think he's going to help this defense potentially a lot this year. But when I picked Mike Hall, one thought I kind of had in mind was, what if Mike Hall had been the guy who got here last spring and Tyleek Williams had shown up in July?
Yeah, no, I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. So Tyleek Williams is 10. Mayan Williams is 9. And we had a discussion when we talked to running backs. I said, hey, maybe I've been doubting Mayan Williams too much. From the 8-4-3, Mayan Williams, there's no way they watched the Nebraska game and don't think he would have been a difference maker. Mayan Williams from the 4-4-0, my vote is Mayan Williams. I think he already had a good amount of wiggle and so much power that if he trimmed down slightly, gained some speed, and kept that power, he will be a perfect complement to Trevion. I just see him being a reliable guy that we'll be able to count on to come on in and spell Trevion and not see a huge drop off in performance, or to be used in third down short goal line situations and be confident he will get positive yardage. I think he would be a feature back at most other programs in the Big Ten. So I just see a ton of upside. We had that conversation the other day where we thought maybe he'd started all but 4 Big Ten teams. From the 7-4-0, with Williams, I think there is a bit of a negative bias towards him with mainly Buckeye talk because of the manner and ranking in which he came into the program. You've already made half a podcast on why he's not that good. So I know where you stand. I just disagree. So, Nathan, that idea, like, we just had a podcast the other day where I was like, I don't know, maybe like he said he lost some weight. He got a little bit faster. He kept the power, you know, the idea of him being a compliment to Trevion Henderson. My main issue a year ago was when people were driving the bus for Mayan Williams or Master Teague as like the alternative to Trevion Henderson. Like, no, I don't think Trevion Henderson, a true freshman, is going to be the guy. I think it's going to be Master Teague and Mayan Williams. So that's where I started, and I thought that was crazy. I thought that made no sense. I thought this guy you flipped from Iowa State you think is going to be more important than a 5-star freshman, and I know he's a true freshman, but come on. The ceilings are not the same. So that's where it started. But a conversation about can he complement the All-American candidate, I think, is a different conversation. What do you think about Mayan Williams being in the top 10 here, Nathan?
I get it, just from the fan favorite status that he has definitely built over the past couple of years. I expected him to be pretty high in this vote. And I think of him the same way I thought of Teague in a lot of ways. I think there are some limitations to his game. Doesn't mean he can't be very productive for a team that's trying to win a national championship. And I was always the one who kind of spoke up for Teague, or I may say I always was, but I definitely over the years would push back a little bit on the like widespread criticism of Teague and say, like, listen, like, he's still going out there and doing the things when he only has to do the things he's supposed to do, he does them. It's only when he's like exposed beyond that, that it becomes a problem. And I think that would probably be true of Mayan Williams. I think if they had to play a full season with Mayan Williams at the top of the depth chart, I think people would see the difference. But that's, I think that's true of the difference between Paris Johnson and Zen Michalski too. That's a bad example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you can say that about two people at every position. Like, somebody has to be the backup. Somebody is the next tier down, and that doesn't mean you're bad, especially at Ohio State. It means you're actually one of the best college football players at your position in the country, probably.
Yeah. I think we're all getting in the same groove on Mayan, which is like, he's probably a pretty good backup running back. And I don't think he should like take carries away from Trevion Henderson if Trevion Henderson's not tired. But Trevion Henderson is going to be tired at some points. Then Mayan Williams will go in and it'll probably all work out very well. Steel Chambers is 8th, Steven. Not a lot of discussion about him. Chip Traynham was one of the 1%ers, and I wanted to talk about him and we didn't. I thought maybe, especially I did this linebacker story that I think I talked about on here, but it went up Wednesday morning. It was like, hey, I asked all the linebackers, who's the fastest, strongest, funniest, smartest? And Chip Traynham, like almost everybody, 4 out of the 5 people said Chip was the fastest. Tommy Eichenberg said Steel Chambers. And a couple people said Chip Traynham was the strongest. I could see like, hey, there's this guy who's fast and strong and is converting from running back at Arizona State to linebacker at Ohio State. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I'm going to drive the bus because when I think it hits, it hits. Steel Chambers, if you drive the bus for him, Steven, and we didn't really get a lot of people explaining it, what do you think that looks like? Like, you think he can be first team all Big Ten? Because it sort of seems like he's definitely the starting will linebacker. Like, how good would he have to be for this to be a successful bus ride?
First team all Big Ten.
Okay.
That's the only way that you're okay with your first and second string will linebackers are former running backs. And I say that for either one of them.
It's hard because, like, there's just so much juice with C.J. Hicks and Chip Traynham in different ways. There's so much, like, uncertainty. There's so much, like, ooh, what could that look like? And Steel Chambers has a lot of that, too. But, Nathan, it's almost like one of those things. He's not very established as a linebacker. For him to be maybe Ohio State's best linebacker, a guy who's played linebacker at the college level for 1 year, is weird. That, I think, is an indication of the state of the linebackers. But it's a credit to him. But then it's almost like, he should be still like new and exciting and like, wow, we should be, this guy was a running back 15 months ago, but because his backups have even less experience than him, he's almost not as exciting. But again, he is a dynamic personality. Everyone says he's funny. He's a great interview. He busts his butt. You watch him play and he's shooting in the backfield and making plays. He made plays last year at linebacker when he got in the second half of the year, Nathan, that nobody else was making. All people as fans, and a lot of times you want to see a linebacker attack every now and then, and you don't know the responsibility. You don't know what the play call is. You don't know what his duties are. But when you see a linebacker attack somebody, it just makes everyone.
That's not a compliment though. Last year that Steel Chambers was making plays that no other linebacker.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But he's the best they've got.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've all had that discussion. I mean, like, again, but we're not, but he's doing the best he can, but somehow he's almost viewed as like an experienced guy when actually he still does not have that much experience. He should be an exciting new guy, except this room doesn't really have many established guys, so he's the established guy.
But what is your expectation as an Ohio State fan? It's that you're recruiting guys who come into this program, and it's not just that it's not just that the guys that Ohio State plays will do things that other guys aren't doing. It's they'll do things that other guys can't do. And again, linguistics, but you see what I'm saying there? Like, it's like which of these guys are going to come here and do special things? And I thought Steel Chambers did important things for this team last year. I don't know if people look at him and see him doing special things. Now, whole year of experience under his belt, better foundation, more experience, has a better head on his shoulders as to what the position entails. I could see him taking a step forward this year, but I also know that maybe the enthusiasm on him, it could be tampered down a little bit by the fact that you've got C.J. Hicks still looming in the background. I know that not a lot of people picked C.J. Hicks necessarily, but it may be why they're not picking Steel Chambers.
Yeah. So, okay. So Steel Chambers is seventh, and then the top six, one, two, three. No, he was eighth. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Steel Chambers was eighth. The top seven all have at least 6% of the vote. It's pretty good. That's kind of a lot of support when you've got like 34 people on the ballot and another six or eight people getting write-in votes. When we come back, we'll dive into them. We're driving the bus on Buckeye Talk. All right, Steven, number seven is Emeka Egbuka. And this is a guy that it's fun to drive a bus for. He was the number one receiver recruit in his class. He's a second year guy. He's going to have a role from the 216. I'm going with Emeka Egbuka. I have a feeling he's going to be the guy to break out with defenses focusing so much on JSN. Plus his name is even more fun than JSN's. So that's a big plus too. Chris Olave, fun name. Jackson Smith and Jigba, very fun name. Emeka Egbuka, super fun name. The logic is indisputable. I like people who get Buckeye Talk. Kenny Stabler from the 614. I'll go with Emeka. I think he is a caged animal ready to explode, and I still have some doubts about Julian Fleming. So I think Emeka could steal a spot and become the second or third dude. From the 614. Last year, I drove the bus for Egbuka and said he'd be the best of this era of receivers by the time he's done. I would now put him behind JSN. Otherwise, I'm doubling down. Wow. I feel like Egbuka is a little forgotten at times, generally, not by any person specifically. I haven't come off him as the number one receiver in his class. He's going to be good enough that going into 2023, people will be talking about him and Harrison the way they did about Wilson and Olave going into 2021. A couple more on Emeka. People are excited from the 330. There's a lot of guys on this team I would drive the bus for, but I'm going with Emeka. I think we are really going to see why he was the best receiver in his class. And he becomes so good this year, we cannot take him off the field. I see him having a JSN type of second year. I cannot wait to watch him. Last one. From the 567, I voted for Ibuka. At the beginning of the offseason, I wanted him to start over Julian Fleming. However, as we got through spring, I fell in love with the idea of Emeka being the number four receiver and practicing at all of the positions. Also, I think he provides a lot of value as a return man. Anthony from Finley says, thanks for the survey. Go Bucks. Steven, this is a lot of juice for Emeka Egbuka. Is it warranted?
I respect the way that all these people drove the bus for Emeka Egbuka, because I was actually going to ask that. Are you driving the bus for Emeka Egbuka, the kick returner, or Emeka Egbuka, the wide receiver? Because those are two totally different ways to drive the bus for him.
And special teams is so diminished in college football anymore. It's like, I mean, you're going to drive a bus hoping that a guy like one time returns 73 yards. Like, it's got to be at receiver.
Yeah, I like it. And I do like that you also sent out to the Texans right after you sent out this poll, or maybe a couple. I don't know how much longer it was, but who has the better season between Julian Fleming and Emeka Egbuka? Because that's almost a conversation here. And so you feel like the other two spots are locked in.
We have not talked about Julian Fleming yet. I will tell you that he is higher on this list. But let's have this conversation now, because you just referenced it, Steven. I did send that out because, again, you can't drive the bus for everybody. And if someone's getting picked up, someone else has to get left at the bus stop. And I think this is most clear, Nathan, in the Fleming Egbuka conversation. Who will have a more productive Ohio State season in 2022? Almost 500 votes. Nathan, I said Egbuka, Fleming, or it will be virtually the same. I did give people an out. Okay. 11% took the out, and maybe they believe it in their heart. They're both going to have 35 catches for 500 yards, right? They just think it's going to be, they'll split it. They'll both be important. They'll both be great, or they'll both be disappointing. I don't know, but 11% said both. Nathan, who do you think won, Egbuka or Fleming, in the poll of more than 500 people? We know that Fleming in individual votes for number one, when you got to pick one guy out of 40, Fleming got more votes there. So he got more energy with the votes, but the broad spectrum, who won, do you think, Nathan?
So about 89% left in that vote. I think Fleming won like 48-41.
Steven, who do you think won, Egbuka or Fleming?
Fleming. Yeah, Fleming.
Emeka Egbuka, 49%, 40% for Julian Fleming. Nathan, does that surprise you?
Yeah, obviously. I just said it was the opposite. Like, so almost the exact thing. Opposite. Here's but thing, I almost drove the bus for Egbuka. Like, that was, if I picked an offensive guy, that might have been who I drove for. Mostly, I don't discount the special teams impact. Not that that's what I would have been voting on, but that when this guy got on the field and got a ball in his hands, no matter how it got there, special things happened. That hasn't been true of Julian Fleming. Now, he hasn't had the kick return opportunities that Emeka Egbuka did, but yeah,
he did though. He just didn't do anything with them.
Well, but not as regularly as Emeka Egbuka did. But you're right. I just think it means something when a guy as a true freshman gets on the field, and it's not just that, he very solidly got out past the 20, so that was a good kick return or whatever. Like, no, like, this guy is like, keeps being like a shoelace away from maybe breaking that. Don't make that be why you're driving the bus.
Let's talk about receiver.
But that does leave into why you're talking about receiver, because I'm saying, anytime you get the ball in your hand and can do something special with it, so that you could have more confidence that that's going to happen with Emeka Egbuka this year than it will happen with Julian Fleming, based on what you've already seen on the field.
First time he got the ball as an actual wide receiver, he took it 85 yards and was a shoelace away from scoring a touchdown. So, yeah.
Who would you have voted for, Nathan?
For just more production this year?
If you answered the poll question.
I would have voted for Fleming, but I I would have voted for Fleming.
You would have voted for Fleming. You just made a good Igbuka case. I'm surprised you say you would have voted for Fleming. Steven, who would you have voted for, Fleming or Igbuka?
I think Fleming. I think I'd vote for Fleming, but Igbuka would have the louder moment, if that makes sense.
That's not what the poll said. So you would have voted for Fleming. I'm interested. The way you guys talk about Igbuka made it almost sounds like to me like you would vote for him.
Like just because we've seen
in his hands. I know. Then I'm asking, who would you vote for? And you both said Fleming. So we have a Fleming conversation ahead. I think this is conflicting, Stephen, for fans. Mm-hmm. I think fans don't really know what to think. And sometimes you have a poll and we talk about it like it's close, but everybody leans one way. It might be like, well, I think this, but the general consensus gives this guy the edge. I think people don't know, Steven, that they don't have I don't know. I don't know if Hartline's going to rotate him equally. I don't know how much Igbuka might play a couple other positions. I don't know. I don't know if he'll go with the hot hand. It's quite interesting, Steven, that we don't have a great grasp on it yet.
You don't know that. And you also just, we know what makes Emeka Igbuka dangerous. We just don't know what makes Julian Fleming dangerous. You might have an idea based off what you've been told, but we don't know because of every reason we've talked about time and time again, the opportunities just haven't been there for him to show that. While with the other three, at bare minimum, you know why they're dangerous.
Sixth is G. Scott, and this is a long conversation. We've got to scoot a little bit because we don't want to go 2 hours, but a lot of people, the people who want G. Scott are way in. From the 859, my bold prediction this year is that G. Scott Jr. will play less snaps than both Royer and Stover, but have more touchdowns than both of them combined. With him on the field, Ohio State essentially has a fourth receiver. I anticipate it will be somewhat matchup dependent, similar to the linebacker lineup. Again, that's the 859. Also on Scott, from the 937, I voted for Scott. I really think he has a chance to fill the reviving tight end role on this team. Although it isn't a big role for this offense, I believe his wide receiver skills will give him an advantage in the room. And when they do want to use a tight end in the pass game, he will be the guy to go to for that. From the 614, I thought about Fleming and Proctor, but I went with G. Scott. Just living in a fantasy world where Ohio State throws to a dynamic tight end, but he seems pretty forgotten about at times, and he's got the talent to force Ohio State to throw him the ball, I think. Probably more next year than this year, but I think he finds a way to flash and make an impact this year. From the 330, he will change the role of tight end at Ohio State and open up opportunities for the position that others have never reached. Start molding the statue. That's a bus. You're driving the bus past the statue. From the 614, I chose G. Scott because I don't think Ohio State has ever had a receiver turn tight end before, and it could be a lot of fun to see what this skill set brings. Using a tight end to catch balls first and block for runners second has never really been a strategy at Ohio State, but I think that even if his blocking is just adequate, this could be a unique weapon to use. And from the 614, my bus could have had several passengers, but I chose G. Scott. It's not a position that's heralded at Ohio State, but he chose it as his best option to get playing time as for his future NFL plans. Every year, we talk about whether the tight ends will really get featured and it never happens, but maybe, just maybe, this guy with true wide receiver skills and a newly developed tight end body will get to make his mark. Nathan, whoa, man, maybe his dad's listening. That's a lot of people believing in G. Scott. A lot of respect for a guy making this transition. We've seen it. You can see it. There's a lot of work into his physical transformation. What do you think of the juice, Nathan?
I like it. I've always been intrigued, as much as we've talked about the way Ohio State uses a tight end room, that what if, though, they get the right athlete there that makes it more viable to use the tight end more as a receiver. But it's you're really threading the needle, because it's got to be the right kind of athlete who can do the other things that they need a tight end to do sometimes more as a priority. And I know that Jeremy Rucker, when he was in high school, was sort of a glorified receiver there to, you know, split out wide the whole time. And I know that they've recruited other tight ends like that, but this is something different. This is a guy who was a top 100 wide receiver, like capital W, capital R wide receiver, who then gets converted over physically into becoming this other thing. And I still think I still have some healthy skepticism about it for this year because of the physical demands of it. But I'm still very curious what what, fourth year, fifth year, G. Scott looks like if he sticks around and keeps growing, keeps developing. Do we get to the end of a 5-year process with him and be like, no, that's definitely an NFL tight end?
Jeremy Ruckert is a big butt in this conversation to me.
Literally.
It's like the idea of like, oh, you have an athlete. They had one.
He was making one-handed catches in the Big Ten championship
game. Like, they had a tight end who had receiver skills, and they didn't throw to him. So,
but
I mean,
I don't think that's a different kind of athlete.
Yeah, it's a different kind of athlete. He's not you think G. Scott is like substantially like a better pass catcher than Jeremy Ruckert? Like I just because he played receiver before.
Hold on, is it really a different type of athlete? Okay, yes, he moved to tight end because there was better opportunity to get on the field, but also because he couldn't keep his weight down to play wide receiver, and it was easier for him to just put some weight on and be a tight end. Which those are the words that came out of his mouth. So that's part of this, but also, where are we driving the tight end bus at Ohio State at this point? For a guy, and you want me to believe that about a guy who, as of right now, perception says he's the third tight end in the room, behind Cade Stover and Joe Royer, who was also a receiving tight end. So I'm not going to put that much stock, if any stock, into a guy where, even if he does have wide receiver skills because he played in high school, so did most tight ends at the college level, because they come from high schools where they're probably their best receiving threat. So then most of them don't really learn how to play tight end until they get to college anyway. So I get it. It sounds cool to have a top 100 receiver now playing tight end and what that might mean, but they're not going to use him over any of the top 100 receivers who did pan out at wide receiver.
They're not looking.
That's why I'm not saying, I wasn't thinking about 2022 impact. I think his impact is bigger.
I'm not thinking about any year impact for him, to be honest with you.
Jeremy Ruckert would never have been evaluated as a top 100 receiver, right?
I don't know.
One of the top 10 receivers in the country? I don't think so.
I think you are underestimating Jeremy Ruckert's pass catching ability, just like Ohio State did. Like, listen, G. Scott's put on weight. He's still 25 pounds lighter than Jeremy Ruckert played at.
Yeah.
And Ohio State's not putting a tight end on the field that's only a pass catcher. You have to be able to do both.
Right.
They don't want to put a guy in the field and say, they're definitely throwing to him. So I think the implication that, like, I disagree with the implication that G. Scott is a significantly different type of athlete than Jeremy Ruckert. He's a different kind of athlete than Cade Stover or Luke Farrell. But I think they had it. They had it for 4 years, and they stared at it and told it to block. So,
and every so often told him to go downfield and throw him the ball. They ran one tight end screen. They ran two tight end screens, one for Jeremy Ruckert against Utah, and then the other one they ran the Mitch Rossi.
I think they could have, if they had wanted to, and they were killing people with a lot of other things. They could have killed people down the seam with Jeremy Ruckert a lot. And I think he had the ability to like get behind linebackers and make catches. And he showed it when they did it. And they just didn't do it. So this is the kind of thing. This is like a tall receiver. People love tall receivers. People love receivers who convert to tight end. I would say last year was physical transformation. I think this year is like positional transformation, but I'm still viewing it as more of a transformational year for G. Scott. Get his body in line, and then let's see what happens in 2023. That I think is more reasonable for him to be sixth in the voting for bus driving this year. I think is a little bit of wishful thinking. And some of the people even said that, like, it's my fantasy that Ohio State throws to the tight end. And I'm just telling you, they had an NFL pass catching tight end on their roster that they didn't throw to for 4 years. So,
yeah, I think 2022 is a leap for him too.
Yeah. Number five is Jack Sawyer, that like literally nobody, I don't think anybody wrote in about. They just are excited that Jack Sawyer is going to be good. So I think we don't have to talk a lot about it. We're going to have a defensive end conversation when we talk to Larry Johnson and the defensive tight ends in the future. So we'll acknowledge that Jack Sawyer was a top five vote getter and move on to number four, Josh Proctor. And this is a guy we've had a lot of conversations about. People are very excited about this from the 312. I voted for Josh Proctor, mostly because I am rooting so hard for him. And I think in a safety-driven defense, you have to drive the bus for the best safety. I like that reasoning. A close second was Julian Fleming. So I think that Proctor line of thinking, safety-driven defense, give me the best safety. From the 419, Proctor all the way. I think he becomes All-American in Jim Knowles' safety-driven defense. This is a former top 75 recruit who has shown flashes in terrible defensive schemes and has not been able to have one established role on the team. That's our guy, Wes K. From the 615, I picked Proctor because if the defense is going to be great and it is safety focused, then it has to be Proctor leading the way with his experience and talent. A couple more from the 614. The guy made a real impact in 2020 in the postseason, and I feel pretty strongly he'd be starting in an NFL defensive backfield now if he hadn't gotten hurt. Way too much disrespect for this guy among some fans. And from the 804, I picked Proctor because I think he might flourish in this Noles defense. He is finally healthy and could emerge as a big play guy and act as an eraser for this D. From the 804, Nathan, the other thing about this is from time to time on the texts, we get texts from people who think we talk too much about Josh Proctor and are expecting too much from him. There are definitely some people who think, I don't know why you guys talk about him that positively, but here's a lot of juice for Josh Proctor.
It's just, you've seen the flashes. I know that he has been hurt. I know that there were times when he didn't get on the field when we and a lot of people expected that he would be. Sometimes I think there was a misevaluation there, such as in like the entire 2020 season, perhaps. But so I understand the pushback, but you've also seen him go on the field and like lay people out and make diving interceptions and just make plays. And if you're an Ohio State fan, since, you know, before this season, so if you've been watching this team the last two seasons, you've been like starved for somebody to go on the field and make plays in that defensive backfield. And there's every reason to believe he can do that this year if he avoids the alien abduction.
I'm not surprised he's top five, Steven.
Big Ten championship game 2020, making plays. Minnesota game, making plays. Oregon game, even in that god-awful showing of a defense, he was making some plays. And so it's almost like the last hope of this pod driving the bus for Josh Proctor together.
It's one of those things that, and I think we know what this would look like. There's enough people who I think have questions about Josh Proctor that it's like, well, what was driving the bus? What would it look like? It would look like he's one of the most important players on the defense, and he makes plays on a regular basis. And whatever that leads to from an award standpoint or whatever, it's just, boy, we really did miss him in 2021. I can't believe how much that, because he feels like he's fixing things. I think we know what a successful bus would look like. Third, Steven, I think is your guy. Starts with an M.
It does.
In the middle is Arvin.
Yes.
Harriso, and ends with an N.
It does.
And then there's a junior.
Yes, there is.
So let's talk about this a little bit from the 614. I was the one who made the comment last year about what if CJ Stroud turns out to be really, really good. I feel vindicated. This year, I'm going with Marvin Harrison Jr. Maybe it's the Rose Bowl. Maybe it's the pedigree. But I feel like this could be really special, especially with Jackson requiring constant attention from the defense. I know last year, Nathan debated whether you could drive the bus for a projected starter. But I think with this offense, Marvin Harrison Jr. could have an exceptional season for a sophomore and first-time starter. Thanks for all that you guys do. From the 937, voted for MHJ. I think he's going to have the opportunity to have some pretty consistent Rose Bowl-esque games throughout the year. However, I did that typing in and erasing Travion's name for the sake of choosing someone relatively unestablished. I do think Trey is going to jack people up. All right. What led you to this guy, Steven?
One, you already referenced the Athletics freaks list. He's number two.
He is number two.
Some of the reasons why he's number two, 6'3.5", 206 pounds. He can bench 225, 22 times, which is kind of ridiculous for a wide receiver. But his max is 380. His shuttle time is 394. His broad is 10.9. And he can run 23 miles per hour. Marvin Harrison might be a freak. And I think we did this on a pod like 6 months ago when we brought up the idea of what if Marvin Harrison Jr. is everything Garrett Wilson is as an X receiver, but also he's 3 inches taller and like 10 pounds heavier. What does that look like? And we got the flashes of it, whether it was the Rose Bowl or in some blowouts where I think the Indiana game, he had a play where he was doing stuff with the ball after he caught it. I said, if you're going to pick a guy, you got to really drive it. I am driving the bus with a brick on the gas pedal, no breaks, and we are going all the way to record breaking, where I think he breaks Ohio State's single season record for touchdown catches in the season, and it's at 17. And it's the combination of what he just might be as an X receiver already, but then also goal line fade on a 2 yard line.
And you picked him to be a first team All American.
I did.
The Buckeye Grove thing, which is also a pretty good brick on the gas pedal. From the 7-4-0, I had to go with Marvin Harrison Jr. I remember a discussion you guys had about Chase Young being sort of the final iteration of the ideal Ohio State defensive end. This is kind of what I think this is what you're referencing, Stephen. Mm-hmm. And I am fully on board with MHJ being that for the receivers, right? It's sort of like all these guys, but even like maybe a little bigger, a little more physical with all the same skills. I can't help but buy in 110% when a sweaty, topless Marvin looks like Mr. Olympia catching passes against air. And then someone else like sort of redid their vote after the freaks list came out. After reading the freaks list from Feldman, I'd like to revise my bus driving. And then he went through all the numbers that you did. Nathan, top three, not surprised. Steven is driving this bus pretty hard, but this is not unreasonable to think this guy's special.
Yeah, it's you have to mark it down in terms of like some big numbers, because I think everyone assumes there's going to be a fairly high baseline of production here. I mean, you're the guy in this offense that I wouldn't expect him to come off the field very much this year with the first string offense. You know, if they decide to go two tight ends, he's probably still on the field. And I've believed in that concept of him being a major like red zone weapon for a long time. Like a lot of that just really fits. And there's all the physical tools you're talking about. I think the pedigree thing is real a little bit, and it's not just that your genes or your name make you good, but the example and the advice and the tutelage that he gets from his dad, it has to help. You talked before, Doug, I think it was just on yesterday's pod, about the margins, and he seems to just have so many things in his favor that reduce those margins and allow him to put closer to 100% of himself on the field at a pretty early age.
He's got a professional approach, which I mean, you learn that when you grew up around pros, and he's just such an outlier from the prototype of what Heartline recruits, you know, the 6'1", 190 guy where you can kind of put everywhere. He has a lot of that skill set. He's just bigger. So, yeah,
we've seen it. You see what that approach does. Michael Thomas, his uncle's Keyshawn Johnson, Michael Thomas was a pro from the minute he got to Columbus. A seriousness of purpose, that you just handle your business, and there's just no doubts about you handling your business. And if Marvin Harrison Jr. has that kind of seriousness of purpose, and then probably maybe even like more, I don't think it's probably has more physical gifts than someone like Michael Thomas, then you're really talking about something. It's interesting. I'll direct you to the College Football Survivor Show this week that I did with Shahan J. Haraja. This week we were ranking all the playoff contenders by their pass catchers, by their receivers and their tight ends. And so we were having a long conversation about Ohio State and USC and Bama and some of the Michigan's receiver room, I think, is much improved this year. Who has the best receiver group? And USC has Jerry Rice's kid, and Ohio State has Marvin Harrison's kid. And it's like, man, talk about pedigree, you know, like you're going head to head with this stuff. So if you want to continue, try to put some of these receivers in a national context, go find the College Football Survivor Show this week.
That'd be a really cool all son of a Hall of Famer team. I think we've reached that point, especially in football, where could you put together a starting 22 of Hall of Famers? And how good would that team be after you put it together?
Sounds like a project. Sounds like an offseason project.
Yeah.
Two is JT. So, Steven, you had said you had an offensive guy and a defensive guy. Who was your defensive guy? Is it him or was it somebody else?
No, he finished second because I didn't want to just it would have felt lazy to just pick two 2021 guys who might just be awesome this year. My other guy, which I'm kind of shocked, and it doesn't seem like he's going to get any votes, is I think Ty Hamilton is on the Davon Hamilton plan, except he's achieving it a lot faster than his older brother did. And so I was driving the bus for he has the same impact his brother had in 2019, but he does it in year three instead of year five. I was almost more validated in feeling that after I saw that starting defensive line last week.
Okay. So the top three, then there were three guys. Josh Proctor and Jack Sawyer both got 7% of the vote. Each got 7% of the vote. Marvin Harrison Jr. got 10% of the vote. JT Tuimoloau got 11% of the vote. So that's a lot of support. I voted for JT from the 5-6-7. I think the Cam Hayward comparison is spot on. It's going to be a wrecking ball out there. There's a reason we all remember the visit at the airport with the Hawaiian shirts and the lake-clad coaching staff, and it's because this guy was the number 4 overall player in his 2021 class. He's going to look every bit a part of that ranking this year. He's going to set himself up to be a top 5 pick after next season as well. Get on the bus. One more from the 614. It's JT. The Bucks really need someone on the D-line to step up and perform at a Bosa Young level. I think it's going to be JT. Nathan, good pick for number 2?
Yeah, I think it's a good pick because, yes, he has accolades. Yes, he's actually even already started games. But because of the way he came in, that wasn't a given. And I think when you're driving the bus for him, again, it's not like, well, I think he could, like, you know, probably be a starter or whatever. No, it's like you like, Steven and I think both marked him down as an All-American on some team this year. And that's really what the level is when you're driving a bus for him. You're saying that, like, an arrival happens this year.
I think if you really wanted to drive the bus and really take it far, Ohio State hasn't had a player in the top 10 in the Big Ten in sacks since Chase in 2019. And it hasn't had two players in the top 10 at the same time since 2018 with Chase and Draymond. If you wanted to really drive the bus for the Jack JT show showing up, you could say that both of those guys are going to be top 10 in the Big Ten in sacks this year.
I do think there's a sense, though, too. To me, if you're really going to drive the bus for JT, I think you're almost expecting sort of like a Joey Bosa-like impact on 2014. Mm-hmm. And I'm not comparing them directly as players, but it's like, what does that look like? Well, it's like, as a sophomore, Joey Bosa was the linchpin in the national championship team, and they probably wouldn't have won it without it. He wrecked stuff. He made amazing plays. He tackled two guys at once. He threw running backs into quarterbacks. He was fierce. He was a problem every snap, and he did it as a true sophomore. Like, that to me, if you're going down the JT road, because we all think he's going to be good. And again, I think nationally they're not quite on the board yet, and they'll get there. But I think if you're going to be on the bus, like, you've got to be in that range. Maybe not quite that, because that was an amazing season, but game wrecker for a national title contender as a sophomore. That to me is the threshold that we're talking about if we're going to have that JT bus driving conversation.
Mm-hmm. I think so in context, last year there were some games where Tyreek Smith was like arguably the best player on the field, at least defensively for sure, but maybe even beyond that for like a couple of games, just the impact he was having. I think what we're saying about JT is taking that kind of Tyreek Smith impact and spreading it over 15 games, it's still something higher than that.
Yeah, no, it's if Tyreek Smith is in the conversation as part of the comparison, I don't think it was quite bus level.
You need to be the reason why Ohio State wins a game or two. Like, literally, reason number one, the way Joey Bosa was in that 2014 season, the way Chase Young was, the way Nick Bosa, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, Nick as a sophomore is really good too.
Yeah.
Sophomore is really good too. All right. That leaves us. We all know who the number one guy is. Who's number one? Who's the guy left that we have not talked about yet? 14% of the vote. JT was 11%. This guy got 14% of the vote on a list that had 34 names on it. That's not easy to do. A lot of people are into this guy. And it's Julian Fleming. This is people believing in the nagging injuries go away. Third-year guy, former number one receiver in the country from the 937. I'm torn between Court Williams and Julian Fleming. I pick Fleming, as I did last year, because I think he has a more immediate route to the field and I can only see Court getting out there for meaningful times if others are struggling. So that's part of it, too. Like, if you picked Julian Fleming last year, like, that wasn't a great pick. Now, again, there are injury things here, but it didn't pop last year. It might pop this year from the 440. I voted for Fleming. What if he pops this year? Could he be an All-American? I think he can. And I think he will benefit from the already established number one threat in JSN. We've already seen how dangerous multiple receivers in one year can be. Another one for Julian from the 314. For me, it's Julian Fleming. Seems like everyone has put Harrison Jr. and Egbuka over him in the wide receiver pecking order. But they forget that some recruiting publications considered him to be one of the better receiver prospects in high schools in years. To come out of high school in years. He's been blocked by both injuries and great receivers ahead of him. I think all four of the top receivers will be really good this season, but I'm rolling with Julian to take off more, to take off in a way that most people don't think. From the 5-6-7, part of driving the bus for a guy is sticking up for him. With the healthy year, Fleming will prove the people wanting to move on from him wrong. Marshawn Lattimore award winner, Nathan, which is something we talk about a lot, that third year guy who pops and leaves. This is Joseph in Atlanta, our guy. Julian Fleming is on the Lattimore track. Everybody on the team raves about how good he is behind the scenes, but we've never seen him healthy. Now he finally gets healthy and we'll see him break out on his way to the NFL. Nathan, is this the right guy to be number one on the list when you consider all the things that go into it?
I think so. It makes a lot of sense. And the one of the first texters points it out. Like, I know that we've talked about wanting to see him flash more in the opportunities he did get. But at the end of the day, no one has that we've talked to around the program has really been saying, well, he's just really not getting it. Well, he just is always a little bit behind. Well, we may have been wrong. It's always like, no, like it's here. He just hasn't had a chance to show it either because he's hurt or because being here for him has not meant being ahead of Olave and Jackson Smith, Jigba, and Wilson. So, like, what do you want to say? Like, if Julian Fleming has an All-American season this year, it would surprise nobody around Ohio State's program, I think, just because that was what he was brought here to do. And it's been some circumstances beyond his control that have kept him from doing much these first 2 years.
Steven, the difficult thing here is, can the bus drivers for Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka, and Julian Fleming all be happy at the end of the year and feel like they had a good bus trip, like a good field trip? You go, you pack your lunch in a brown bag. It was always like, well, when you pack your lunch and you take it to school, you have to get the milk at school. But then when you go on the field trip, you can take a can of soda. Like, what's better than orange soda in a brown bag on a field trip? In third grade, we went on a field trip to a horse farm, and I bought a little leather bracelet for a girl, and she was like, what is this? So that. So like that. Like,
was that your first heartbreak?
Oh, yeah. First of many. Like that, right? Not the heartbreak part, but is that, will that be it? Will someone to have Doug LaMaurice heartbreak? Third grade Dougie. Or can they all be happy? Or is it impossible, Stephen? Is it impossible for, because if JSN is going to be JSN, we all assume that. Can the other three all have successful bus rides? Or is it just not enough footballs?
Not in this exercise, where the whole point of it is like, who is going to be more awesome than we already think they're going to be? No. I think two of the three can, because Ohio State basically had 3,000-yard receivers last year, if, you know, if they actually don't lose to Michigan. So that can happen again this year based off what the recruiting rankings and the talent is in that room and the way Heartland's developing guys. It's not a crazy thing to think that Ohio State could have 3,000-yard receivers, even if JSN does what he does. But someone's going to, if that's how it looks, then someone's just going to have to wait another year.
Because I do think if people drove the bus for Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson last year, I'm not sure that they had a successful bus ride. They weren't bad, but I don't think Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave necessarily exceeded expectations. Jackson Smith and Jigba took all the exceeding expectations juice. So the expectations are lower this year. Only JSN has the same level of expectations that Garrett and Chris did last year. So it changes the conversation. As Steven said, this is a very specific conversation. It's a exceeding expectations conversation. It's not being good. It's not helping the team. There are some guys that's like, well, of course, but it's more than that, Mason. So I don't think all the buses can get home safely in this receiver room in this style of conversation.
Well, but all these buses aren't necessarily going to the same destination. Like, all these field trips are not necessarily created equal. Like, you know, the Marvin Harrison Jr. voters, I think that's like a, that's like a field trip to Cedar Point, right? And then, like, the Julian Fleming voters,
I think that's a field trip to Cedar Point, too. It's just
maybe, yeah, but maybe they find out Cedar Point is closed and they have to settle for going to, like, the soda factory or something like that and see how pop is made. You get some free samples or something like that. And then you make a Buka one is maybe they're shooting lower, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you can have successful field trips because I don't know that all that when you start driving those buses, I don't know if you're envisioning the same destination.
I don't think that can be the case. I get what you're saying, but with this discussion with these three wide receivers. I don't think that can be the case when the reason Julian Fleming is number one is because everybody thinks he's on the Marshawn Lattimore plan. And the reason why Emeka Buka is so high is because people think he's the number one receiver in year two who might just go off. And the reason why Marvin Harrison Jr. is so high on this list is because he's in his second year as a top 100 guy who's got all that pedigree and he might go off. I think in this situation with these guys, it is the same destination. They're all trying to get to Cedar Point and only two buses are going to make it.
One time my daughter's class was going to a landfill for a field trip and she missed it. She missed it because we were in Disney World and she was like, "Ugh, I can't believe you made me miss the landfill field trip." We said, "You missed Garbage Mountain. We were on Space Mountain." She's like, "Ugh, my parents are the worst." If Marvin Harrison Jr. has 800 receiving yards this year, does the bus get home? Steven, yep. You're driving that bus. 800 That's receiving home. Yards?
Oh, no, 800. I thought you said 1,800. 800? No.
800. I don't think it is. If Julian Fleming or Emeka Buka each have 500 receiving yards, does the bus get home?
That's not getting home. That's just, okay, you had a really quality season.
Yeah, that's not being bad players. I don't think that gets home. I don't think anyone who put Julian Fleming or Emeka Buka on their list was like, 31 catches for 500 yards. Boom.
There's a point to this exercise that's irrational. Confidence in somebody and 800, 600, 700 yards is not irrational confidence. A wide receiver. Chris Olave had 900 receiving yards last year. That's decent, but it's not an elite year.
So that's the thing. I think we're getting into semantics. I mean, again, those would be helpful. If you told Brian Hartline, "Hey, Marvin, you know, JSN has 1600 and Marvin has 850 and the other two have 500. He'd probably be like, "Awesome, let's do this," whatever. But we'd be like, "But what about the bus?" And Brian Hartline would be like, "Can I throw you under a bus right now? Get away from me." So a lot of it is semantic, but in the end, Julian Fleming, clearly number one. Fleming one, JT two, MHJ three, Proctor four, Sawyer five, G Scott six, and Emeka Buka seven, Steel Chambers eight, Mayan Williams nine, and Tyleek Williams 10. And then Zach Harrison, Tommy Eichenberg, and Cam Martinez all tied there. I got to go eat. We got to get out of here. We're trying to be a little bit more under control. I'm also trying, I don't know if you guys noticed, I hope you did. It's a pain in my butt, but it's worth it. I'm trying to put timestamps on discussion stuff. So if you're trying to figure out, I only want to listen to this part or that part, I'm trying to give you sort of timestamps of like general discussion topics so you can find the stuff that you really want. That was one of the things that people brought up on the Make Buck I Talk Better thing. So we're trying to listen. So for now, that's the bus. We hope you enjoyed the ride. We'll be very curious to see who gets to the field trip, who gets to not Garbage Mountain, but Cedar Point. For Steven Means. For Nathan Baird. I'm Doug LaMaurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.